Tiv Galeartha Falsheroth, and welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron on this Monday evening. It's a little cold out there. Crisp. Clear sky, but crisp and cold. But again, that's what you can expect for the end of January and as we go into February. At least the days are getting longer and brighter at the end of the day. And won't be too long before we start. Well, it will. It'll be another 6 or 8 weeks before we start to feel the warmth, but something to look forward to always. We have a wonderful program, I hope that you think so, put together for you tonight, because tonight what we have is a Brian Friel program. Literally, we're talking about nearly a Brian Friel festival going on here in Ottawa at the moment, and that is performance of Dancing at Lunasa is going on over at the Ottawa Little Theatre, and then 7:30 Productions have Molly Sweeney, and that commences at the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama. That opens tomorrow night. And tonight's program is devoted to the first half to Dancing at Lunasa and the second half to Molly Sweeney. But some of the things that are going on and that I want to tell you about. First of all, you can go on my website and there's a calendar there, and that lists the events that are going on in the city. And my website is www.thegaelichour.ca. My email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca, and we put a playlist up to there. So the music that you hear tonight and what we have put together for tomorrow night, you'll find that up there also. But as I say, I want to fill you in on some things that are going on. Tara Players are continuing their run of Smash, a wonderful production, and that's over at the Arts Court on 2 Daly Avenue, and that will be Thursday to Saturday of this week at 8 p.m. And as I say, Dancing at Lunasa, that opens at the Little Theatre tomorrow evening. Well worth heading down. It runs until February 9th with a Sunday matinee on February 3rd. And we will have tickets to give away to that performance on the performance on Wednesday night. That will be, I'll give those away tomorrow night, or if you want to send an email, do so. austin@thegaelichour.ca. On Saturday, the Ottawa 67s and the Kingston Frontenacs, there is a fundraiser, and that is for the Ottawa Outcare Foundation. So give, that is Gail Carl at 613-232-2273 a call if you want to get tickets there and support the Outcare Foundation. And of course, Saturday is Robbie Burns Day. The annual Robbie Burns dinner will be going on at the Crown Plaza, 101 Lyon Street, on the 26th. Tickets for that are $50, and you can get those at 613-521-5625. And we're devoting tomorrow night's program to Robbie Burns music. So, you know, it'll be, I know I've put the music together, and it's something I'm looking forward to sharing with you tomorrow night. So, as I say, if you want to get tickets to Dancing at Lunasa, send me an email, austin@thegaelichour.ca, and then we will also, I'll announce the winner of those tomorrow night. And the other thing I want to mention, of course, is that Cultus Cultori Éireann, they run Irish dance classes and language classes at Blessed Sacrament every Monday evening at 6:30. And there's the Irish Society drop-in, and that's from 11 until 2 over at St. Margaret's Mary's at Sunnyside and Fairburn. And then we have Cultus Cultori Éireann set dance classes at 1026 Baseline Road in Nepean. And every Wednesday to Saturday, down at the Heart and Crown, the Irish Village, music, live music, Wednesday to Saturday. And I want to express my thanks to the Irish Village and the Sacto Corporation for their continued sponsorship of this programme. But enough talk out of me. Let's listen to Bill O'Connell of the Tara Players.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cummerton, and Dancing at Lunasa opens over in the Ottawa Little Theatre on Tuesday, January 22nd, and it runs for 3 weeks until February 9th, and then there is a matinee also on Sunday, the 3rd of February at 2 p.m. And it is directed by Tom Taylor, and I'm talking to Tom Taylor here at Ottawa Little Theatre. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Tom.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Austin.
Dancing at Lunasa, Brian Friel.
Yes.
A tremendous, tremendous play, and certainly renowned worldwide.
It is, it is. It's, in fact, it's a very difficult play to actually to do with, you know, and but a very, very challenging and rewarding play. A great character studies as you've been through the play. I hope everyone will see it, you know.
Before we talk about Dancing with Lunasa, let's talk about your involvement in theatre, because I know it goes back a long way, and your involvement in Irish theatre.
Yes, well, I've been involved for a number of years at the Tara Players. seems a number of Friel plays, and perhaps the one that I thought to look back on in Friel was a play called Freedom of the City, and the Freedom of the City play actually ended up winning the Theatre Canada Award in 1990, and it was a great fun to do. And,
right.
But there's been other great stuff down at the Tara Players. Juno and the Paycock was a play that I enjoyed doing with a local brother, Eddie Mulvaney,
right,
playing Jaxer. And The Shadow of a Gunman was another O'Casey play, and O'Casey's a great writer.
Yes, yes. And of course, Tara did lots of J.V. Keane.
Yes, of course, yes. And I think Irish theatre has been a real contribution of the Tara Players. And as you know, Austin, yourself, is that sometimes people identify the Irish culture as something that only happens in a pub,
No.
And of course, one of the things that the Greek tradition is the literary tradition and the dramatic tradition, and that's, I think, is one of the pleasures I get out of it, is to say to people in Ottawa, listen, there's another part to us than standing on tables and clapping our hands,
And of course, it's a very appropriate because Smash is running at this point in time with Tara.
Yes.
And John P. Kelly has Molly Sweeney opening this week also.
It's almost like a Friel festival, isn't it?
Correct. And John will be on later in the program
also. Lovely.
You've acted and directed.
Acted and directed. Both of them are most enjoyable. I mean, acting has its own rewards, It's just being out there, the roar of the grease paint, the smell of the crowd,
Right.
And the directing also has, it's a different kind of reward. It's nice to sort of see trying to get the chemistry, between people, and to watch people as they grow. I often say to them when we first meet, especially when people come for auditions, I'll say, look, what we're going to see 2 months from now is going to be totally different. Otherwise, why rehearse,
Right.
So to watch the growth, and because theatre it's an organic thing, and of course it's all different people, and with all of the strengths and weaknesses that we all have, So that chemistry and seeing that sort of take place is a beautiful thing. That's one of the rewards you get as a director.
When you start out on a production, do you have in your head a concept of what the end product needs to be for you?
Yes, you do. Yes and no. Yes and no. I think some people do have a very clear idea of what the sort of the visual will be, but I think that can become robotic, I think you have to be open, to an actor will come along and say, I'm hearing this, or I'm seeing that, or I'm feeling that. And if you're not open to it, if you're simply saying, look, you're job is to get through the door and such and such a line. Well, you might as well have robots. So
right.
I think that I like the idea of something growing and growing and growing,
And of course, every actor has their personality that they do bring with them.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. And I think that's, I think that again, as I say, that's the fun of directing, Actually, once the play is up on stage, my job's done. There's nothing more I can do,
Right.
That opening night, that's me finished,
Well, other than, is it not a bit like an architect? I suppose an architect building a house when they hand the keys over to
That's right. I mean, you can stand back and admire it, from the other side of the street.
Right.
And at that point, I sort of sit in the audience, and I'd like to sort of just touch on that for a moment, because one of the things that a director can do, and should do, I believe, is to bring the audience to the actors. You see, the one thing you and I can't do, we never see ourselves.
Correct.
You started this morning and shaved, we both saw a handsome young man, right?
Agreed.
They don't see us as the wives see us, right?
That's right.
So an actor is up there on the stage, they can't see themselves as somebody else. Nobody can do that.
Right.
So a director can say to them, look, this is what the audience is seeing. This is what they're, this is how, in effect, the audience is feeling.
Okay.
You might feel a certain way, but here's what I feel when I hear that, and that's the very important part.
And when sitting in an audience in that environment, because audiences differ,
yes,
you obviously then must pick up on the mood of the audience in order to be able to reflect it.
Yeah, and I think there's one thing, and this is maybe a carryover from days of acting, is that the one thing that an audience, the most precious thing I think that an audience can give you, is silence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean, that we're paying, that quiet. I mean that silence that's sort of tangible. you know. And as an actor, if you can feel, you know that audience is right up sitting with you in that living room or in that whatever it is. And I think that as I sit in an audience as a director watching a show, I'm really listening to the silence.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy's different, you know, farce is different. There's those sort of tension moments that break with a good laugh. And Irish theater sometimes, you know, sprinkles the laughter with it because you can't be sort of totally serious and morbid the whole night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the silence that an audience gives you, what they're really saying deep inside is, you know.
See, what I love about theatre is that the actor is on stage.
Yeah.
And unlike a movie, where a movie can actually move scenes for you or bring you to where they yeah. want and create the weather and create everything.
Yes.
The playwright and the actor have to bring you with them
yes.
everywhere.
Yeah.
And of course, the role of the director is to make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it, in a sense, it's magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a kind of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Someone, sometimes an inexperienced actor will say, well, you know, this isn't very real. And I'll say, but where else do you have a house that has only got three walls?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or, of course it's not real, there's a staircase that goes up. Now, if we all stop for a moment, we say, well, we know it doesn't go up two flights of stairs.
Yeah.
But the magic is, as we sit in an audience, says, oh yeah, he's going upstairs.
Right.
Or she's gone out the door,
right.
You know? And that's the magic, and I think that's the magic of live theater. Uh-huh. That you give yourself to it. Uh-huh. And even some of the lighting effects, if they bring down the light, you say, well, I guess it's going to nightfall.
Right, uh-huh. Right.
So that, I think, is that's magic.
So dancing. Dancing at Lunas.
Yes.
A tremendous piece of work.
It is indeed. It's for those. I mean, a lot of your audience, of course, I know will be familiar with the play, but for those that aren't, it's a memory play. It's about a young man who takes us back, okay, to when he was about 7 years old, and he brings us back to a place that occurs a lot in Brian Friel's place, okay, Ballybeg.
Mm.
It's a mythical village, really, for him in Donegal. And he brings us back to this summer of 1936, okay, and his memories as a little boy of his five aunts, of an uncle that has returned from 26 years or so in working with lepers in Africa and comes back with rather startling changes in his personality, and a father that has run away and, you know, and left him. And so Friel sort of, through the narrator, I think, creates for us this marvelous family. And 1936 was a period, not just in Ireland, but in Canada, a period of tremendous change.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mundy sisters, that's their family name, the Mundys, they earned a living by knitting gloves, and then the local factory has started in, and so the cottage industry is being wiped out, you know. One of the sisters is a school teacher, and the reputation of her brother, who has come back from Africa, is going to affect her job. And I don't want to give too much
mm-hmm.
away, but
mm-hmm.
but it is a period of social, economic, political changes in this little village. And at the same time, we have this wonderful little boy who brings that back to us. You know? They made a movie of it with Meryl Streep,
mm-hmm.
and there was one thing they couldn't do in the movie, and I think it worked very well in the play. In the movie, the little boy is a little boy. In the play, the little boy's imaginary.
Right.
Uh-huh. So what we will see, again, without giving too much away, is that the actors have to react to an imaginary child.
And this is what I mean about...
with the audio.
A movie and the theatre.
Yes.
That the theatre has to bring you with
yes,
it
yes.
by action and word.
Exactly. And see, and we can sort of say as an audience, yeah, that little boy's sitting on the end of that stool because
yes.
the actor's talking, is
yes.
it? And whereas the elder version of the little boy, he's saying the words off to the side and we put it together.
Right.
And that's, let's say, that's live theatre.
So the cast of Dancing at Lunas here
yes.
in Ottawa this time around,
yes.
you have a
we have
strong
a,
cast.
We do. There's always sort of a good turnout for casts here at the theatre. we're very fortunate in that we've got two very strong Irish actors, and that has helped us with some of the non-Irish, because there are nuances, there's lines that are said and one's not quite sure. So instead of the director always saying, oh, here's what it means, it's nice for a member of the cast to hear from somebody else. And so we got Kevin Riley, who's playing the narrator, and we got Margaret O'Kelly, who's playing one of the older sisters. And they're very strong, and also very, very helpful, with the other members of the cast. And the rest of the cast is local.
Right.
Which brings also, I think, a very important point about Irish theatre, is that, in one sense, Irish theatre isn't Irish theatre. If it was only Irish theatre, it wouldn't translate. It wouldn't come across the water. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
If Shakespeare was only English tragedy,
okay,
nobody would go and see it in the Ottawa Valley.
Right.
Nobody would go and see it in New York.
Right.
So the magic of Friel and other Irish writers is that they pick themes that are universal.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to be played out in Ballypeg. Okay? And yes, we have to respect, as a cast and crew, we have to respect the context. But we're not here to bring people exactly to a Donegal village, and a kind of a Barry Fitzgerald.
Yes, I know. On top of the morning.
We've all been through that,
Yes.
So what we're sort of saying is, what is happening to this family, and why have you, as an audience, who come here on a Wednesday night in the middle of the end of January in Ottawa, it's snowing outside, why should you really give a damn about this wee fellow and his aunts and his uncle and all that? And that's the universal, and that's what Friel and O'Casey and the great tradition of it, they do that.
Yes.
So you can play it in New Zealand, you can play it in New York. This play won 3 Tony Awards in New York City.
That's right.
Now, it wasn't just all the New York Irish going to it.
And again, as you said, something like that is not going to make it to Hollywood with Meryl Streep if it were purely a parochial production.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, and that's, I think, is the magic of it. And it would be, again, I keep using that word, I don't know why it keeps coming out, magic, but Friel has a special touch, for that kind of theatre.
Right.
And he brings out those sort of nuances, Now, again, if you're Irish and you're coming to it, well, I'm sure people are going to notice, the Sacred Heart picture on the wall, and we will pick out the Hurley stick, and all that's going to be, and that's an added bonus for the. And we try to kind of respect that for the Irish audience,
and the authenticity.
And we've had some fun with our set designer, who is actually he's from England.
Okay,
and we're sort of saying, that Sacred Heart picture has to be there, because that would have been the home,
Tom Taylor, I'm going to let you get back to work.
Okay.
And again, the reminder is that it opens Tuesday, that's the 22nd, and runs until the 9th, and that's Tuesday to Saturday, but there's one matinee performance on the 3rd. Box office number is 613-233-8948, that's 233-8948. If you want to get tickets, and certainly play well worth taking the time to go. Tom Taylor, thanks a million for spending some time on the Gaelic Hour.
Ah, it's a pleasure, Austin. And we'll see you at the theatre, right?
You will indeed.
Lovely.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM.
Oh, I think I might do. I think I just might start wearing lipstick. Do you hear this, Maggie? Steady on, girl. Today is lipstick. Tomorrow, it's the chin bottle. I think I just might.
Long as Kate's not around. You want to make a pagan of yourself?
Far too pale. And the owl mouth hair. Need a bit of colour.
What for?
What indeed? Make a nice dress, that, wouldn't it? God forgive me.
Will you come to Abyssinia? Will you come? Bring your own cup and a saucer and a bun. Mussolini will be there with his airplane in the air. Will you come to Abyssinia? Will you come? Not bad, have you?
You should be on a stage, Rose.
And not a bad little lake, have you?
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on 97.9 FM with Austin Cummerton, and I'm talking now with Kevin Riley. And Kevin plays the part of the narrator in Dancing at Lunasa down at the Ottawa Little Theatre, and his character is Michael. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Kevin.
Thank you, Austin.
So, Michael has a pivotal role in this production. First of all, Kevin, you've been on the stage here in Ottawa since you came from Ireland a while back. You've been on numerous times in a variety of productions.
Yeah, I've been on, I don't know, maybe half a dozen times. I've done some plays with Tara Players over the years, and I've done a play here with Ottawa Little Theatre about 3 or 4 years ago called Mass Appeal with Jeff Grusin and Joan Eady. And I've been involved with Joan with Tara Players. I think we did 2 or 3 plays together, and then we did another play, Someone Who Watch Over Me. Actually, we took it to Ireland to the Dundalk International Theatre Festival, so I have a little bit of experience, yes.
Were you involved in theatre before you came over?
Yeah, I've been involved in theatre probably since I was about 10. My father used to do amateur theatre in Ireland, and my mother was involved in it too. She used to make the costumes. And, you know, so I've been involved in amateur theatre in Ireland, like community theatre. I've been involved in Longford. I've been involved, my brother is actually a director. He's an amateur director in Ireland, and he's won numerous awards with the Backstage Theatre Group at Longford Town. And I've done work with those guys. And I've also done a little bit of work, amateur work again in London when I used to live there, and a little bit of amateur work in New York as well over the years. So I've been... I like it because it introduces you to a community very quickly, and I really like Irish theatre because it reflects on a time in Ireland before the Celtic Tiger and all the craziness that's going on in Ireland right now. I think it's more reminiscent of times in Ireland when things were more simple and more honest.
So Dancing at Lunasa, this is your first involvement with it?
I beg your pardon?
You didn't act in it previously. It's your first involvement with Dancing at Lunasa.
I've never seen this. Yeah, I think I may have seen the play a few years ago, but I'm not sure. I don't think I did. Yeah, this is the first time I've been involved in it. Yeah, I play the part of Michael. I'm the narrator. I would be the son of one of the ladies in the play, and I'm telling the story to the audience as to what happened to 5 sisters in a small town in Donegal in the 30s, and how their lives changed, and how they were changed, the impact of change on their lives with the introduction of technology. Back then, the technology would have been the introduction of the radio, that kind of thing. So I'm the narrator. I tell the story to the audience, and then the rest of the guys in the play, they enact it, really.
That's a role of a narrator is... very, very onerous task, because you have a huge amount of lines.
Well,
normally,
yeah. There's quite a few lines, but it's actually, I think, easier than being on the stage, because I'm not interacting with anybody. So if I get myself into a little bit of a pickle, I can get myself out of it. Whereas I think the people on stage have a more difficult task, because they're interacting with each other. And they have to have a split-second timing of their lines, so I really don't think the narration is that difficult.
Right. Remembering the lines, a huge amount of work from the time you start on something like this to when you get to your opening night.
Well, yeah. But you just have to sit down and start at the beginning. It's like learning a prayer or a song. You just have to start and learn the first line and then learn the second one and keep going until you finish. It's just an exercise in patience.
Well, I'm not going to keep you much longer because I know you have a rehearsal going on, but it's certainly for anyone that does want to go, and I am strongly recommending, you're opening on Tuesday the 22nd, that's tomorrow night, and you're running from 8 p.m. and that's for 3 weeks up until February the 9th, and then you have a matinee, I gather, on
Sunday the 3rd of February at 2 p.m.
and the box office number down there is 233-8948,
and that's open from noon until 7 p.m.
Okay. Kevin Riley, thanks a million for taking time to talk to me here in the Gaelic Hour.
Thank you, Austin, my pleasure.
What are these supposed to be?
Hi.
Well, God help your wit.
What's with your walking in, Maggie? You're standing on a tail.
Oh, did it squeal? I'll make a deal with you, cub. I'll give you a penny if those old things ever leave the ground, right?
You're on.
And the Merry Sisters of Fate, the Long Acre, and also Horselips and the Musical Priest with the High Reel. And I'm now talking with Margaret O'Kelly, and Margaret plays part of the eldest sister in Dancing at Luna's at the Ottawa Little Theatre. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Margaret.
Thanks.
An important role and a very critical role in Dancing at Luna's. If I'm not mistaken, was this the role that was played by Meryl Streep?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So you're following in Meryl Streep's footsteps. Tell us about...
It's a nice role. She's the eldest sister, and like that, the most responsible, and feels, not necessarily the most responsible, but feels a sense of responsibility. And she feels this huge sense to keep the family on the straight and narrow, and also to keep them looking well in the eyes of the community.
Okay.
Very conscious of the community around her, and especially the church. And it's a family that has been sort of in the good books, because the older brother has been in the missions for so long. And of course the community loves his family, and slowly it's dropping notch by notch in the eyes of the community. And poor Kate has to try and keep it all together, and it's a hard task.
So this is your first stage appearance here in Ottawa, but you're not new to the stage.
No, that's right.
You performed in Edmonton, and prior to emigrating, were you involved in the theatre in Ireland?
Yes, in school, mostly in school, and then afterwards in an amateur pantomime group. We used to put on pantomimes over the Christmas period, which was a lot of fun, but then more serious stuff when I came to Canada.
So how have you found your Ottawa debut experience?
Oh, great. Wonderful, really. I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to delay you too long, because I know you're on doing your rehearsals. And as I've been mentioning it, we're opening tomorrow night, that's the 22nd, at 8 p.m. and tickets are at 233-8948 and the box office is open from noon until 7 p.m. Margaret O'Kelly, thanks for taking the time to chat with me here on the Gaelic Hour.
Thanks, Alison. It's a pleasure.
And now, Cultus Cultori Éireann and Ryan Slipjeg.
Listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Comerton, and we will be back with you after these messages.
The little Irish village in the heart of the Byward Market had its humble beginnings in 1992 with the now famous Heart and Crown. A second venue, the Snug Pub, since 1997. And then there's Mother McGinty's and Roisin Dubh, the Black Rose, since 2001. They complete the Irish village, each a treasure in its own way. Visit the Irish village. We can accommodate groups of all sizes. Private seating areas, spacious patios, and party rooms. Tell us about your special event and we will take care of the rest. 613-562-0674.
Coming soon to Chin Radio, traffic and weather updates. Get informed and keep informed with what you need to know before you step out the door and head out to face the world. Weather, traffic, and so much more. It's all at your fingertips on Chin Radio, 97.9.
The Adelaide is a distinctive one- and two-bedroom rental apartment complex located at Preston Square. The Adelaide is exactly where you want to be, close to downtown, easy access to the Queensway and just a short journey to the airport. A short walk from Dowes Lake and the experimental farm, you can experience rural living in the heart of the city. The Adelaide is a smart building incorporating state-of-the-art security and environmental systems. Call for an appointment, weekday, nighttime and weekend viewings. 613-230-1500.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. And recent theatrical successes in this city have shone on John P. Kelly. In last year, he was fortunate to be selected as Best Director and have Best Actor in A Night in November, if I'm not mistaken. John P. Kelly is here with me. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, John.
Thank you very much, Austin, again. It's wonderful to be here.
And as I say, congratulations on the awards that you received for 2007.
Listen, let me tell you, in this business, some people hear me saying it all the time, you're as good as your next show, not your last one.
Tomorrow night, up at the Otto Schoolands of Speech and Drama, which is in Westboro, 294 Picton Avenue, you're launching Molly Sweeney, a Brian Friel play.
I am. This, in a way, is a change of direction for 7:30, the company, because up to now, indeed, if I would criticise myself, we could have a name for doing what I call in-your-face theatre. Very modern, very new, very gutsy work. This is a modern Irish classic. A beautiful, beautiful play by undoubtedly Ireland's greatest living writer, and I say that there is no writer in Ireland who will say anything different. Brian Friel is the best.
Before we talk about Molly Sweeney, tomorrow night also down at the Ottawa Little Theatre we have a Brian Friel. There's Brian Friel being launched.
We have.
And so here in Ottawa, same night, two Brian Friels opening, it's fantastic.
Well, it is fantastic. It's almost like a little festival.
Yes.
And I really, you know, if I could just wish the as in Canada, you can't wish people best wishes. You have to say break a leg, but I really feel like saying break a leg, what everyone says here, to OLT for their Dancing at Luna. So another wonderful Brian Friel play.
Yes, we had Tom Taylor in the first half of the program talking about dancing. And
he's good to that man. He knows
yes,
his stuff.
Yes, indeed. An excellent production. You're running tomorrow night, starting tomorrow night, And we're running until February 3rd at 8 p.m. and then you have no performances on Mondays and Tuesday.
That's right.
So, and if anyone wants tickets, it's 613-567-6788. Molly Sweeney and Brian Friel. Who have you acting in this?
Well, this time I have Kel Parsons playing, who's well known in the Irish community particularly, playing the part of the title part of Molly. I have Jerome Bourgault, who those people will have seen working with me twice before. Once in Kings of the Kilburn High Road he was in, and he also was in my very first production here of Eden, mm-hmm. which seems like 10 years ago now, which is actually only, what, 3 and a little bit years ago.
Right.
But the very strong cast, don't leave out John Collins, who would be known in the OLT circles very much, who has done a lot of work directing and acting with OLT, and they're working very hard on it. It's a very difficult play.
Right. We're going to talk to Kel shortly and get her impressions of who her character is. But the theme of the play... What can you tell us without giving the game away?
No, I don't think it's a really... I'm not really too worried about using that term, giving the game away, because it's not a mystery story. It's a beautiful, lyrical, gentle story told through monologue about a woman who gets a chance to have her sight restored after 40 years of being without sight. Whether she gets that sight back or not is a question that people who see the piece have to make their own mind up on. But it's not really... Friel is not writing about that. Friel is writing about the difference between vision, insight, knowledge, understanding. Even to quote my old father, God rest him, and he'd say things like, there are none so blind as those who will not see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about understanding, it's about mystical vision, about all of those things. And it is a play that I think audiences, I hope, will sit up and listen to and learn from.
Given that it's you're saying it's told in a monologue, so does that mean each character effectively, do they really interact with each other?
They don't interact, but it isn't a question of, say, sitting through an act to listen to one person talking. Each character has 13 monologues.
Okay.
So, and it's a fairly solid lump of a play, but we'll have you out by 20 minutes past 10 singing and dancing.
And the venue, you're going back to the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama. You were there for Night in November.
I was. I make no bones about it. The big challenge for 7:30 is always to find a venue, and we move from space to space, and it's always a challenge. The people in OSSD have been very helpful to us. It's a studio. It won't seat more than 60 people.
But it's very intimate, which is the
very intimate, which I think suits the piece.
Yes. Yes, because I think when you're in a theatre of that size, you are part of what's going on.
Well, that's what theatre should be.
Yes. What else can you tell me about Molly Sweeney and 7:30 Productions?
Well, it's nice the way you started this by saying all those nice things about me. But, you know, I'm not really a very modest person. But let's face it, 7:30 is a very small production company. It's a struggling, fledgling production company which tries to bring professional theatre to Ottawa. To date, it has always done Irish theatre. I don't necessarily think that it should always do Irish theatre. I think it should do theatre, and certainly the Irish theatre is working very well, and there is a large Irish community, and I would like to think that we continue to cater well for that. But I would also say that right now I'm planning a Scottish play for May. And we have to move around. But of course, a lot of people here say Irish, Scottish, same thing. Those of us from Ireland, of course, don't agree with that.
No. But I think there's an important qualifier there, and that is that there is a lot of Irish theatre that has a very deep universal human theme that everyone can relate
to. Absolutely right. And none better than Brian Friel for that.
Yeah. John P., I wish you every success with this production. I hope you fill the seats every night, and that maybe you have to do a remount stage in the future. And thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Austin. Again, my best wishes to OLT.
Thanks, John.
Gaelic Hour, Chin 97.9 FM.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton. Tomorrow night at the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama, which is out in Westborough at 294 Picton Avenue, John P. Kelly has his production of Molly Sweeney by Brian Friel being launched. And in the lead role of Molly Sweeney, Kel Parsons takes that role. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Kel.
Thank you very much, Austin.
Molly Sweeney, who's Molly Sweeney? And tell us a bit about Molly. Well, before you do, who's Kel Parsons? And tell us a bit, and tell us a bit about
Parsons,
your...
Kel Parsons is no one, unfortunately, but I'm just a local actress. I've been acting for a number of years. I tend to do a lot of Irish theatre, although I don't by any means do that exclusively, and I've done some film and so forth, and I do some writing as well. And this is the first time that I've worked with John before as a production manager, but this is the first time I've worked as an actor, and I'm delighted to be taking on this extremely challenging role. So that's me.
And your voice has certainly been at the Ottawa Little Theatre. Have you been on the stage down there?
Yes, I have as well. I am involved with OLT. I've done a couple of plays there, and I work with their communications committee. And yes, I believe the last role I did there, I was only an offstage voice. Yes.
Right. So Molly Sweeney, who's Molly Sweeney?
Molly Sweeney, of course, I should say that one could describe several Mollys Sweeney, I suppose, because there is the sort of flesh and blood lady you get an idea of here and then. I think there's Molly Sweeney as a more allegorical character, but I think to describe her as the person you might see in front of you. She is a woman who lives in northwest Donegal, in the fictitious Ballybeg, small town Donegal. She has been blind from the age of 10 months. She works as a massage therapist in a health club. She has what seems to be an extremely enjoyable, independent, very functional life. And she marries a little later in life. She marries, say, in her late 30s. And after she's been married a couple of years, the man to whom she is married convinces her to visit a consultant to see if her sight can be restored.
Okay.
And actually, restored isn't even really the right term, because if you've seen only since you were 10 months old, then... You've seen nothing in a sense.
Right.
So she agrees to do this, actually against her better judgment, we realize. And partway into the play, she describes the party that takes place at her place the day before she goes into hospital to have the operation. And partway through the operation, partway through the party, she realizes that she doesn't really want to do this. She has a beautiful life with a complete world, and she begins to wonder why she does this, and she has a moment of rebellion that I think in an appropriate Irish way goes with music. So give
us a flavour.
I will. And then a strange thing happened. As soon as Tom played the last note of the Lament for Limerick, I found myself on my feet in the middle of the sitting room and calling, "A hornpipe, Tom! A mad, fast hornpipe!" And the moment he began to play, I shouted, screamed, "Now watch me, just you watch me." And in a rage of anger and defiance, I danced a wild and furious dance round and round that room, then out to the hall, then round the kitchen, then back to the room again and round it a third time. Mad and wild and frenzied, but so adroit, so efficient. No timidity, no hesitations, no falterings. Not a glass overturned, not a shoulder brushed. Weaving between all those people, darting between chairs and stools and cushions and bottles and glasses with complete assurance, with absolute confidence, until Frank said something to Tom and stopped him playing. God knows how I didn't kill myself or injure somebody, or indeed how long it lasted, but it must have been terrifying to watch, because when I stopped, the room was hushed. Frank whispered something to me. I don't know what he said. I was suddenly lost and anxious and frightened. I remember calling Rita. "Where are you, Rita?" "Here at the window," she said. And I stumbled, groped my way to her and sat beside her. "Come on, sweetie," she said. "We'll have none of that. You're not allowed to cry. I'm the only one that's allowed to give a performance and then cry." Thank you.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron, and I'm now talking to Jerome Burgo. And Jerome plays the part of Molly's husband in Molly Sweeney, which is opening up at the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama tomorrow night. Jerome, welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thank you.
You've worked with John P. previously.
Yes, I have.
Because I remember seeing you in Eden.
That's correct, yes.
And you're back on stage here now with 7:30 Productions.
This is my third production, in fact, with John. I also performed in The Kings of the Kilburn High Road.
Yes.
With him back in 2006, I believe it was.
Yes.
At the Poorhouse.
Yes. I didn't manage to find time on my schedule to get to that one.
Oh, dear.
However, so you're playing, as I say, we're playing Molly's husband in
That's
this.
Correct, yes. His name is Frank Constantine Sweeney.
Right. And tell us about Frank.
Oh, he's a fascinating character. And that would be the word he would use, too, is fascinating. He is a person of 10,000 interests and the attention span of a hummingbird. He's a guy who has...
I'm beginning to relate.
You begin to relate a bit. He's in love with so many different things, and he has absolutely not a shred of discipline to follow any of his interests through. Yes, I see you wincing. In fact, yeah, he'll jump from one project to another out of sheer passion for it, and not so much that he loses the passion for it, but he finds something else equally fascinating, and he'll jump onto that as if he were reading the dictionary.
Okay.
And come across a fascinating word that'll key on to something else, and then he'll jump to a National Geographic magazine or a Reader's Digest, because he doesn't have any formal education, but he does have a ravenous curiosity, and he's fun for that, just not disciplined.
I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, well, yeah. he buzzes around. He is an alternate energy source in and of himself. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So obviously must be a very rewarding and satisfying role to fill, to play some type of part like that.
Oh, it is. It really is. And in this particular context, I have a fair amount of responsibility as well, because I think the other two characters are a lot more introspective than Frank is, at least through most of the play. And so it is sort of my kind of responsibility to propel it forward through his energy,
okay,
and his enthusiasm,
okay.
So yeah, so it's a lot of fun, I get to explore I think a part of my personality that is there in myself. I do relate to him, and there's a little bit of an awakening towards the end. But I'll let people come across that on their own. But he's a fascinating guy.
Jerome, thanks a million for taking a few minutes to tell me and share with the listeners about Frank in Molly Sweeney up at the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama, opening tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
My pleasure.
Approaching the end of another Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron, and the music that you've heard in the back half of the programme was Colliers and the Woman of the House with Paddy Keenan and Tommy O'Sullivan, and we had Mick Foster and the High Level Jig, and in the background now we're listening to a Quebec group, Roisin, and that's a Suite de Polka. You have been listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. Do come back tomorrow night. And I have a programme of music dedicated to Robbie Burns, a selection of music that Burns composed the words of, and I think you'll enjoy. This programme is brought to you in part by the generous sponsor.